Hello and welcome to the Saturday, the 1st of March edition of Dalek Radio. Well, we have an anti-censorship special today as we listen to two voices particularly that someone, somewhere, doesn't want you to hear. Calls from the Conservative Party in Bristol and London to ban a Hezbollah speaker from the city's council house have come to nothing. But who are they trying to silence and why? Conservative leader Richard Eddy says he's a terrorist, but what do you think? On Dalek this week, you can decide for yourself. Then there's the injunction this week served on an ex-SAS soldier, ordering him in not to describe in public how British troops, under orders from the Defence Secretary Des Brown, are breaking the Geneva Conventions by handing people over to be tortured. On a similar theme, we showcase World Crisis Radio. Internet radio shows are coming of age over in the USA, as the big media give a deliberately superficial analysis of the US presidential elections. We have the What's On Guys and the old-style Song of the Week from Jeff Sparks, and we have live music from Nicky Johns too. All of that and more coming up, so let's go over to last night's Stop the War meeting at the Council House. Speaking in Bristol with the blessing of Gordon Brown, but not David Cameron. Yes, he was billed as the man so dangerous he should be banned from speaking in Bristol Council House last night. Calls from both Conservative group leader Richard Eddy and his superior David Cameron to ban Ibrahim Massawi from speaking failed to silence this Lebanese newspaper editor who Tories accuse of being a terrorist. Another possible reason the Tories may have wanted to ban him was that he was in Bristol to encourage people to go to an anti-war rally in London in 2 weeks' time. He was speaking in public at the invitation of Bristol Stop the War Coalition, alongside a spokesman from the Iraqi Oil Workers Union. Also on the platform was John Rees, spokesman for the National Stop the War Coalition, who summed up in reply to audience questions at the end.
Okay, there were some points specifically raised about the Stop the War movement, and I just want to try and address those. First of all, I want to say something about the meeting. I think it is absolutely part of the traditional Stop the War Coalition, that if you don't agree with what the speakers have said, you've got the right to come up here and put your point of view and argue with them. You don't have the right to heckle, you don't have the right to grab the microphone for yourself, but you do have the right, when the chair calls you, to come up here and put your point of view and have it heard and have it addressed by the speakers. That's part of our tradition. It's not part of everybody's tradition. It's not part of David Cameron's tradition, because he didn't want, and he raised in the House of Commons and said that he didn't want Ibrahim to be able to come here and put his point of view. It isn't part of his tradition, but it is part of ours. Second thing I want to say is, some people said about the guy who came up here, the young guy who came up here, and said something about the fact that he was young. Well, good for you. I've seen a lot of old people say completely wrong things, and I've seen a lot of young people say completely right things. So I don't have a problem with the fact that you're young. But I do have a problem with the fact that you're wrong. You're undermining your own contribution to the meeting, and that's a shame. Because we listened to you, and now I'd like you to listen to the reply. First of all, you should find out first who you're addressing. You should not lecture Iraqis who fought Saddam Hussein and who were exiled from their country for fighting Saddam Hussein. You should not lecture them about opposition to Saddam Hussein. Because they suffered, and they were tortured, and they had to flee their country. And when you understand that, you should take care to address them properly. The second point is this. You gave accurately the figures for the people who died under Saddam Hussein. But 1 million people, more people than under Saddam Hussein, have died because of the war. You quoted the figures for the numbers of exiles. But more people, 4 million people, have been exiled either internally or exiled externally because of the war. The damning indictment of this war and occupation is that it was worse than Saddam Hussein, and very few of us at the beginning thought that that could possibly be true. Possibly be true. Now I want to address the question about the nature of the movement. Now, it's absolutely true, as the guy in the blue shirt who came up, I think his name was Richard, said, you do not have to be a supporter of the resistance in Palestine or in Iraq or in Lebanon to be part of the Stop the War coalition. All you have to want is an end to the war. And we welcome on the marches and on our platforms all the time people who do not support the resistance. And every member of Hezbollah, or every member of the Palestinian resistance, and every member of the Iraqi resistance that I've ever talked to, have always said, thank God your movement is like this, because they would rather have 100,000 people on the streets of London who oppose the war than 5,000 people who won't want to enter the war and also support Hezbollah. Exactly. But I march alongside people who I profoundly disagree with on those marches. I march alongside people who actually don't want the war, or are against the war, but support the state of Israel. No, I don't. But I want to march alongside them against the war. I march alongside people who are pacifists. Bruce Kent is an old ally of the Stop the War movement. He makes a brilliant political contribution to it. He is a lifelong pacifist, but I have to say, I am not. If I had been alive during the Spanish Civil War, I would have fought the fascists in Spain if I had the chance to do it. So I'm not a pacifist. If the Nazis had invaded and I'd been alive, I would fight them. I will fight the Nazis today if they try and impose their rule on us or attack black people or gay people or trade unions, I would fight them. But I want to march alongside pacifists. I'm not a religious person, but I want to march alongside Methodists and Baptists and Quakers and Muslims and Buddhists and Jews. I want them on the demonstration. So I'm absolutely clear that you don't have to support Hezbollah to be part of Stop the War. But I insist on this. If the American government can hold secret negotiations with the Sunni insurgents, as they call them, in Iraq, if they can meet secretly with Muqtada al-Sadr, if they can talk to the PLO, why can't we? Why can't we have our own conversation with the people from the resistance? Because if it's good enough for the British government, it should be good enough for the British people. And I, for my part, do understand why people resist. I have an old friend, and I go to visit him quite a lot. He lives deep in the Tuscan countryside in Italy. He lives between Florence and Siena. It's a rural area. But it returns the biggest, strongest left vote in the entire of Italy. And I'll tell you why. Because they remember there, and they still remember there, and they march every year in the tiny village from which he comes, because they remember what it was like to be occupied by the Nazis, they remember what it was like to be part of the partisans, they remember what it was like to resist a foreign occupation, and if it's good enough for the French resistance, and it's good enough for the Italian resistance, and we celebrate it, I say it's good enough for other people in other places who are also occupied.
Anyway, there's only one way to know whether the Lebanese speaker Ibrahim Massawi should have been banned or not, and that's to hear him and decide for ourselves. So Dalek's Tony Gosling braved what the Evening Post called a storm of protest and spoke to him afterwards.
I'm Ibrahim Massawi, the chief editor of Al-Intiqad Weekly, a Lebanese paper, and I come here to participate in the Stop the War coalition activities. And to talk about the miseries and the sorrows that wars bring, and to say that we have to defend ourselves and we have to confront the wars in any way possible.
Now, the editor of the newspaper here in Bristol has decided that possibly you shouldn't be allowed to speak here.
I don't know how he based his argument, why I shouldn't be allowed. I believe it's everybody's right to for the freedom of speech, to speak his mind and to say what he believes in.
But he believes you're a terrorist and you shouldn't have the right to speak on a platform like this.
I believe that he has based his argument on false information. I came and speak for quite some time here, and you were here. Did you see that I'm a terrorist? I'm not a terrorist. I'm a freedom fighter, and I'm fighting to defend my country and to liberate my occupied areas. I'm not fighting against anybody. I'm not attacking any people for any reason. I'm only fighting to liberate my country against the occupation. I don't believe that makes me a terrorist.
So people that see Lebanon on the news from time to time, can you give us an idea of what it's like now to live there?
You're talking about a political stalemate, a highly divided political community. You're talking about a confrontation between two projects, two huge plans. One that is wants to annex Lebanon to the American sphere, and the other wants to keep Lebanon independent and sovereign and belongs to the natural area that it lives in, actually. This is the kind of thing that's happening. We don't have a president. They cannot agree on a president because there is a highly, a big divide, political divide among the different parties. And this divide is not among or upon religious line, it's upon political line. You have 70% of the Christians and Hezbollah and Amal Muslims and Shia Muslims, they are together against the de facto government that is being supported by the West. This is because we believe they have commitments with the Israelis and with the Americans to liquidate the Palestinian cause via settling permanently the Palestinians and giving them citizenship in Lebanon. One of the big problems of the Israel now is the issue of the refugees and the right of return. They want to liquidate it and they want to make the Palestinians settle permanently in the countries where they live. I believe our government is involved in this one way or another, and that's why they don't want to have a solution for this, and they don't want to have real participation in the government where we could, like, sabotage certain efforts in this regard.
Do you think there are lessons for British political social movements to learn from Hezbollah? What does Hezbollah do? How does it operate?
Well, actually, you're talking about a political party and a resistance movement against occupation. You're talking about people who take care of their own people and all of the grassroots, huge social network, education and whatever. They are united. They have high discipline. They respect people. They don't attack others or carry aggressions against anyone. They fight to liberate their own land and to free their people who are being taken hostage by the Israelis. They are united, they express themselves very well, and because they are very successful, the Israelis and the lobby is trying hard to prevent them from speaking out. I believe in my case, there is a lot of pressure from the Israeli side to ban me from coming to Europe to talk to the people about what's really going on. People are more aware of what's really going on in the Middle East, and I believe when they get aware about the real image of what's really happening, they will act in a different way.
We hear a lot on the television here about things like the roadmap to peace and the various American initiatives. What's your vision for the future, a peaceful future in the Middle East?
This is what we really need to see. I mean, we want a long-lasting peace, a genuine peace that takes place. But the problem is that they are not addressing this. There are a lot of injustices. And the kind of solutions, the roadmap or whatever, what they call as peace, I believe it's only settlements and compromises, temporary ones. It does not address the core issue of the problem. We all know very well that, for example, Israel is armed to its teeth with the nuclear weapons, and nobody can say anything about it. Nobody dares to say anything about it. It cannot be discussed. It cannot be even discussed when something has to do with Israel and with the Israeli occupation. They occupy other people's lands for so many years, and nobody has the right to fight them. And if you fight them, then you are a terrorist. There is the right of return of 4 million Palestinian refugees. They don't allow to be discussed, and they are trying to postpone it. There is the issue of the Palestinians in the 1948 occupied territories, 1,200,000. They are second-class citizens, and now they want Israel as a pure Jewish state, which is not acceptable in any way. I mean, no, this is a racist state then. And more than that, you have the apartheid wall. So you're talking about combination of problems that Israel is suffering in the advent of its 60th anniversary. And more than that, it's the invincible army of Israel that has been humiliated and defeated in 2006. They have this host of problems that they want to deal with. That's why the Americans are supporting a lot the Israelis, but they are not supporting them to have a genuine peace, I believe the only genuine peace happens when people are giving their right, when real justice takes place, and all of the solutions that are being suggested are not in this direction.
So what's your vision? I mean, do you think it has to be a separation between the Palestinians and the Israelis and no. Arabs and Jews?
No, I of course not. I don't believe in the separation between Arab and Jews and between any human beings. We all human beings, Jews, Arabs, Muslims. I really should like to highlight this. There is no difference between us, I mean, among us as human beings, whether Buddhists, Arab, Palestinians, Jews, Christians, whatever, I mean, believe in heavenly religions or positive religions, we're all brothers of humanity, we should all communicate together and live together next to each other in peace and harmony and prosperity. We should not fight wars, we should not occupy other people's land. But I believe the Palestinians have to have their right to go back to their own countries, to their homelands. They still have the documents and the keys of their houses that they were evicted from it. 1948, you're talking about 4 million refugees. They have the right to go back, while the Israelis are bringing Israelis and Jews from different parts of the world. They have never lived in Palestine, and they're bringing them, so they're not letting the refugees come back. This issue has to be addressed in a good way, and the Palestinians have to be given the right before a real solution can be enacted.
But this isn't going to happen without more fighting, is it? Without more conflict?
I don't want to talk about fighting and conflict. I want justice to prevail. Whatever it takes. I mean, why it didn't happen? In Kuwait, you have petroleum oil, which is very valuable. That's why they fought in order to bring Saddam Hussein from there. In Palestine, you have olive oil, I mean, and they have Israel because it's the asset. I mean, I don't believe that those who oppress and those who occupy should be given gifts and should be prized for what they do.
Free speech under fire from David Cameron and Bristol Conservative Party there, as Lebanese Hezbollah newspaper editor Ibrahim Moussaoui explains his party's position and presumably his newspapers on the Lebanese and wider Middle East occupations and wars. And you can't make your mind up whether or not he should be banned. Why not? Watch the 10-minute long video of Mr. Moussaoui on the Evening Post website at www.thisisbristol.co.uk/Moussaoui, which you spell Moussaoui. Towards the end of the meeting, a Jewish woman came to the front to explain the rarely heard view that not all Jewish people support the actions of the Israeli government and occupation forces.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Michal Nachman, and I am a Jewish anti-Zionist who has the ambivalent privilege. Assure all of you that there are lots more like me working together with all of you, as you know as well, all of you know here. And I am proud to stand here on this stage with these illustrious people who said such inspiring things, who brought forward such a beautiful international message, a message that the gentleman beside me wanted me to add. It's also a message about working class people. And so I want to say that I'm proud to stand with you, and I'll be proudly marching on March the 15th, and I hope that you'll all be there and help to build in the time that's leading up to that, for that. So thank you.
Jewish peace activist Han Achman, who's also been working with Bristol's Muslim Jewish radio station Salam Shalom there, explaining that not all Jewish people support the State of Israel. They're at www.salamshalom.org.uk, which is SalamShalom. The Stop the War March mentioned there, and called to bring troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan, takes place on Saturday the 15th of March in about 2 weeks' time. Coach tickets are available from Bristol Stop the War. The coaches for London leave from Anchor Road, which is outside the At Bristol Centre, at 8:15 a.m, and the tickets are £14 waged and £7 unwaged. And if you want to buy a ticket, you can email bristolstopwar@hotmail.com or phone 07748 982 569. Now we're going to have some Irish music, and this is Cran with Dolman, Charlie O'Neill's Highland.
knock a morolog, Jime, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Kajanak Tasan Chas, the Tulaman the Gala, Suri Ladonin, as the Tulaman the Weedga, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Aman to Humanin, as the Tulaman the Gala, Fuda Ulami, as the Tulaman the Weedga, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Rahman the Newer, Lash the Tulaman the Gala, Kanama Broke the Rara, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Bronca Back to Air, Tulaman the Gala, Paradox through Sarah, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Gajera Tasan Chas, the Tulaman the Gala, Suri Ladin, Nest the Tulaman the Weedga, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Aman to Manin, as the Tulaman the Gala, Fuduulami, yes, the Tulaman the Weedga, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Bahaman the New Lash, the Tulaman the Gala, Canama Brogadir, as the Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Bronga Back to Air, Tulaman the Gala, Baradagas through Sarah, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala, Tulaman the Ben the Wee, Tulaman the Gala.
dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Well, there are all sorts of bizarre takes on world politics out there in the media, but these days I could be talking about TV, radio, or the internet. The United States has always been a place of extremes, but once in a while, on a US internet radio channel, an analysis catches your ear that sounds like it may have more common sense in it than years of television news bulletins or documentaries. I'm referring to something called GCN, or Genesis Communications Network, where you can find shows by hosts such as Deanne Burley and radical historian Webster Tarpley. Tarpley's weekly show is entitled World Crisis Radio, and this week he explained why he believes a new faction centred around Jimmy Carter's foreign policy advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who believes he is the power behind the now famous and tipped for the top senator, one Barack Obama.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley. We're just continuing a rundown of the various and numerous indications that the Zbigniew Brzezinski left CIA faction has essentially completed a creeping coup behind the scenes of the secret councils of Anglo-American imperialism and inside the regime in Washington, such that the lame duck George Bush has now become a puppet of a new set of masters. He may know this or he may not, but we've run down the independence of Kosovo, the Brzezinski operation, the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Belgrade, Brzezinski's signature specialty being attacks on U.S. embassies as gambits in creating international strategic crisis, the shooting down of a U.S. spy satellite by the Pentagon over the Pacific, creating a very, very provocative military stunt. Brzezinski in Syria negotiating, maybe he'll go on to Iran, He's also fresh from addressing that retreat of the House Democrats in Williamsburg, Virginia, where he was pontificating and holding forth in front of the entire Democratic caucus of the House of Representatives. Bush's trip now to the five African countries, the purpose of this is simply the design that Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about on November 30th, 2007, in that very important op-ed in the Washington Post, which you've all got to read. Essentially, Brzezinski's thesis is that China is now vulnerable as never before because of their need of oil, raw materials, energy sources, minerals, all of them coming from Africa, where the Chinese have been extremely active with 50-50 deals that are undercutting the U.S. and the British and the International Monetary Fund. So Brzezinski basically says if you can cut off Chinese access to the minerals and oil of Africa, you can drive the Chinese in on eastern Siberia and get them embroiled in a war with Russia, where the Chinese would be trying to seize the Russian oil wells in eastern Siberia, where there's a lot of oil and rather few Russians, and essentially have World War III, because that's what that would be, in that context. And he thinks the U.S. might be able to stay out of it. Very bad planning. Reminds me of crazy Lady Astor, Lord Lothian, Lord Brand, and the rest of them, Lord Halifax of the Clifton set, who thought they could play Hitler and Stalin and get both of them that way. That was the appeasement, so-called, of Sir Neville Chamberlain. Didn't quite work out the way they wanted. But Zbigniew has forgotten nothing but learned nothing from that one. So he's trying to play China against Russia. But the precondition for playing China against Russia is to kick the Chinese out of Africa. So therefore, we have U.S. African Command, U.S. AFRICOM. We've got Al-Qaeda being sent in to the countries of the Maghreb, Algeria, above all, a big oil producer, Arab and OPEC. And that is what Bush is up to. He is basically the public relations face for this new Brzezinskiite offensive inside Africa. And, of course, Obama, the reason Obama is who he is, right, the Kenyan background, the Luo ethnic group link. Obama is the perfect face to put on a U.S. effort to kick the Chinese out of Africa, because he can say, dear African brothers, look at me, I'm your friend, not those Chinese, look at them, look at me, and then pick who your friend is. Pure demagogy. The Africans are much better aligning with China on 50-50 deals than going back under U.S. British imperialist yokes. Now, if you want to see that Brzezinski's calling the shots, we now get to point six. Remember, in the Chicago debate among the Democratic candidates, July of last year, July 2007, Obama emerged as the biggest warmonger among the Democrats because of his insistence on bombing targets inside Pakistan without the permission of the government of Pakistan, General Musharraf. He said, we see Al-Qaeda, so-called Al-Qaeda, meaning the CIA Arab Legion. We've got to bomb the hell out of them without asking Musharraf. And, of course, that's an act of war, right? It's a sovereign country, quite a big one, 160 million people with nuclear weapons. Not wise. If you really offend them, they might begin to look at you differently. In that point, Obama was criticized by McCain, criticized by Mrs. Clinton. Turned out even Bush thought that Obama had gone too far, because Bush said, wait a minute, you can bomb Pakistan, but you've got to get the permission of the government. So that was, therefore, a big public issue. Now, whose policy is now going on? It's the Obama-Brzezinski policy. When I say Obama, I'm referring to the ventriloquist's dummy through which Zbigniew Brzezinski and company deign to speak.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Well, live in the studio right now, we have a small faction of a band called The Coalition of the Willing. We have three of them with us here today, three guitarists. We have Nicky Johns on the acoustic, we've got Richard Riley with an electric with him today, and James Slater, also on acoustic guitar, and they're going to play three songs for us. Nicky, tell us a little bit about The Coalition of the Willing and you three here today.
Well, The Coalition of the Willing is a fairly large and baggy band involving a lot of local musicians that James hooked up with. And we do gigs with various fractions, all the whole lot. And we've got a few coming up in the months to come. And Rich and I have actually got a gig next Friday at the Mayor's Arms.
Okay, cool. Where's whereabouts is the Mayor's Arms, do you know?
On Clarence Road, which is the road opposite York Road, down one side of the river.
Oh, yeah.
Corner from Temple Meet Station.
Okay, I know. Okay. Well, what are you going to perform for us first?
I'll do Parachute, with a bit of help from Rich.
All right, we'll do Parachute.
We'll do Parachute.
Okay, thank you.
He's got a parachute on his chest. It isn't on show, but you both know it's there. And only a fool puts her heart in the care of a man. With a parachute under his chest. His eyes are so kind and his love is so sweet. With one kiss he knocked you right off your feet. So you started building a life you can share with a man. With a parachute under his chest. Got a parachute under his chair. It isn't unsure, but you both know it's there. And only a fool puts her heart in the care of a man with a parachute under his chair. You feel that cold wind, see that look on his face, and you know that he's come to that other place. So round and try not to scare the man with a parachute under his chair. He's got a parachute under his chair. It isn't on the shore, but you probably know it's there. Only a fool puts a heart in the care of a man with a parachute under his chair.
Well, that was wonderful. So who wrote that song?
Me.
What are your sort of influences, and what do you remember about listening to music when you were young, and what's led you to where you are now?
I don't know. There wasn't a lot of... My parents didn't have a lot of music in the house. I discovered ABBA when I was about 10, but I'm not sure if that lived up or not. I grew up listening to a lot of singer-songwriters, really. I think I discovered people like James Taylor and Joni Mitchell about 15 years after everybody else did.
Yeah.
And sort of worked backwards from there, really.
Okay. How about yourself, Richard? I mean, I noticed you've got the electric there with a bit of a Gilmore kind of slight flavour to it, I suppose. What, are you predominantly electric, or what is your...
I'm commonly called a guitar slut, because I'm very, very, very fortunate to be asked to play for quite a few people around Bath and Bristol. But my very favourites are James and Nicky, and I'm really happy whenever they ask me to play for them. So my influences are wide and varied, and I'm in love with the guitar, and whatever I'm particularly channeling at the time, you know, it seems to come through. Gilmore or Steely Dan or whoever. when it comes to Nicky and James, it's a pleasure to play for them. So it's fantastic.
Well, it's nice to see you and your splendid telecaster here today. Brilliant. All right. Well, we're going to hear another tune now. Yeah. Okay. What are you going to play for us, Richard?
Well, I'm going to play a song which is very new, and it's the first time it's ever been heard at all, ever.
Exclusive. Yes.
Exclusive. This is a song I wrote in response to Prince Harry saying he was out of love with England. And I thought, woe betide a country that prince or king no longer has a belief in. And I guess that makes me feel a bit nervous about our future. And so I wrote a little song about it. This is called Harry Come Home to England. And this is the first time it's ever been heard. I walk green grass under my feet, beneath the houses, beneath the street. The soil we stand on is very deep. We'll find a country beneath our feet. The prince finds war across the sea. He's losing some of his belief. The kingdom lost himself, he sees. People need him to lead them. King and countrymen, fight your war. Remember what you're fighting for. All the battles lost before you start. Harry, come home to England. Dusty desert, the sandy plain, the blood we spill in God's name. Salute your enemy before you slay, for England, queen and country. For we expect our duty done, our honour shown by absent sons. But find the honour in what you've done. Your honour is no longer with England. King and countrymen, fight your war. Remember what you're fighting for. All the battles lost before you start. Harry, come home to England. England that you thought so fair is hidden by flash guns' glare. And the justice that you thought so rare sees everything here in old England. King and countrymen, fight your war. Remember what you're fighting for. All the battles lost before you start.
Mary come home to England. King and countrymen, fight your war. Remember what you're fighting for. Or the battle's lost before you start. Harry, come home to your England.
Maybe not a Republican then, perhaps, for...
Oh no, it's non-denominational. I mean, this is a song about England and how it doesn't matter for me who it just happens to be standing on the soil.
Mm.
We can't forget that we're all together and that we need some kind of purpose and journey. And I'm very much of the opinion that that absent sons out there doing good for people should have a reason to fight, and that reason has got to be for what you believe in, and if you've lost sight of what you believe in, then there's no point in doing it. So for God's sake, let's not have something happening somewhere else, you know, thousands of miles away, that's just purposeless. And if the prince says that he doesn't love England anymore, then what reason is the infantryman for fighting anymore? So Harry, get yourself together and make
some. How do you feel about him sort of serving in Afghanistan at the moment? I mean, he's deaded 30 Taliban already, apparently, and he's been out there for about 10 weeks.
It's not the duty of a soldier to decide when he shouldn't kill. And soldiers just, you know, they do what they do because above and below they're fighting for their friends, their mates, and the people that they serve for.
Mm.
And it's you ask a soldier, you know, when he's in the midst of battle, you know, why he's fighting, he'll tell you that it's not for a particular party or a particular function or a cause. He's fighting for the guy standing next to him. And that's a really special bond. But if the people that are above him have lost sight of what they're doing, then...
Do you take the influence from sort of Pete Seeger and old political activism and folk and that sort of area?
I really firmly believe that people like us, songwriters, have got a really important job to do, which is to use their music to carry a message and to give people who may be a little bit, you know, they don't know, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I was listening to Leonard Cohen the other night and he said the art's function is to make you stop and think.
Mm.
That's the function of art and that's the function of music, and I really believe that's what we do. We make people stop and we give them something else to think about, and if we can do that in a positive way and give a positive message, I think that's the best thing in the world to do. So I'm not Republican and I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Christian and I'm not a anything, but what I am is a songwriter, and I really want my songs to help and to heal. And I want to say to Harry, get a grip and just start believing again. And let's face it, the guy was, you know, I mean, he lost his mum to paparazzi. I mean, that's going to screw you up big style, isn't it? So, you know, gather yourself together and keep going, and let's get it over with, and let's come home and let's start something else.
I like the fact that it's sort of cross-generational, really. I always wish I had a copy of, like, Round Around Hitler's Grave or something, which is, like, a very sort of similar, not that similar, but writing about something that you care about with the same sort of feeling that you did, but of a different generation, and it's sort of the same but different, and it never ends, does it?
Yeah, I said to James earlier, I said, you know, what's folk music? He said, all music is folk music, and I think he's right. I think that Stevie Wonder's folk music, I think that Pete Seeger's folk music. I think our job as musicians is to just carry forward, and let's not write songs about I love you baby. There's enough of that fluff going on. Let's do something good.
You're not going to like this song then.
No, not really. Thanks for that.
Well, with that, let's turn to James Slater. How are you doing?
Hi, good, yeah.
Good. Do you ever get mistaken with James Taylor a lot?
Yeah, quite a bit, yeah. not financially, though, unfortunately.
All right.
That's where we draw the line, really. We've got the same good looks and, you know, same talent, but he's got all the money and I haven't.
Okay.
You've got more hair.
Oh, yeah, I have, actually, yeah. Yeah,
you've got a fine head of hair, actually.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. What sort of angle do you take on your music?
My music? Oh, well, I'm the oldest amongst this set of people, and I go way back to the 1950s, really, when I really started sparking off with music. So, you know, my thing was sort of Buddy Holly and Elvis Presley right through the 60s and 70s, and I just pick it up like a sponge, really.
I just sort of influenced
by everything. Thanks very much. Yeah. And But I'm very, very much into American music. I'm the Americana wing of the Coalition of the Willing.
Right.
And so as such, songs that I write, bits and pieces, are you know, very sort of American sort of influence, because I just love American music. I've spent quite a bit of time in the States, and I've done a few tours out there, and it's always paid off. And it's like taking Cole to Newcastle, but they enjoy me, and they'll have me back.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Okay. Well, any recent favourite new artists that you're particularly keen on that have...
Yeah, I do get involved with promotion of American music at St. Bonaventure's in Bishopston, where we have a lot of American acts, and we had a great trio of players, including a guy called Kevin Welsh, who's from Nashville. He's been around a while, but he's just got that sort of element. What you're finding in the movement of music in this country now, that people are into bluegrass, but that's now moving over to old-timey music, and these guys have just got that element because they have the sort of blues element in there, and that really works nicely.
All right.
So, yeah.
What are you going to play for us now?
I'm going to do your song called Love in Haste. And it's basically about, if you actually read between the lines, it's about sort of life on the road, really. You know, when you're out late at night, mm-hmm. and everybody's gone home, and you're trailing across country, and you just get these thoughts that go through your head. And it's also a song that sort of reflects more the elements of what the Coalition would give you in a big band format.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you. handle the truth about love. Love and hate. It takes a whole lot of muscle putting on the bravest face.
Well, just a reminder then, so you got a gig in the Mayor's Arms on what date was it?
Next Friday the 7th of March.
Okay, and any other gigs that...
We got a gig at the Wookie Hole Club in Wookie Hole, of all places, on the 15th of March, and that's when you can get to come and see the full band. It's, as I say, very much a cooperative band, so whoever turns up. Sometimes there's more band than audience, but no, do come along and support us, and I think a taste of what you've heard today will... you've had a taste of what we can do. You know, cool. It's very eclectic, very broad view. Yeah.
Any sort of www.interweb presence?
Oh, yeah, MySpace, /JSlaterMusic.
Or /NickyJohnsMusic.
Or you could just Google Richard Riley and then look for the one below the United States Secretary of State for Education, and I'm there. And can I just say that I've got a show in Bath on the 20th of March. I'm supporting Jake Shillington of My Life Story. It's going to be a really good show because he's a great figure and he's going to produce fantastic songs, and that's at the Portobello Bar, and above all it's free, so come down to the Portobello Bar 20th of March.
And can I just add that there will be a MySpace for the coalition that are willing as soon as I get my act together.
Okay, brilliant. What do you think of sort of the state of Bristol's music scene, throwing the question at 21, really?
It's healthier than ever. The folk scene is just the best in the country. And everybody's saying this right now. It's marvellously healthy. We've open mics after open mic after open mic, and that's leading to fantastic... And we, James and Nikki and I, obviously, when we all got out of rehab, that was the first place we went to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, it's brilliant. It's fantastic.
I think it's a good platform for people. You know,
James is my carry, which is great.
Yeah, it's a good platform for people that want to get up and sort of move with it. And we see a lot of great young talent, you know, people coming up. And when we get out and play, I think they're always respectful of the fact that, in my case, I'm a lot older and I maybe know a few chord tricks. But we get on really well and it's got a really good feel about it. Mm. Lots of opportunity for people. And I think, you know, we're... Maybe some of the lucky ones will get out and get paid gigs, and that's good. But all in all, Bristol's a really good place for music.
Great. Just finishing with you, James Slater, I understand you spent an evening with Jake Thackeray, the legend.
I did indeed, yeah. Jake Thackeray, back in 76, 77, I guess. I used to live in Gloucestershire, and I was up in the Slad Valley at a pub that was frequented by the late, great Laurie Lee. And Jake Thackeray had come over as a guest to a friend of mine, another musician friend of mine, Dave Wakefield. If you're out there, Dave, hi. The two of them got together and they really got on really well. And it was great because, you see, Laurie Lee was a fiddle player, you know, as his books would sort of reflect. And they got on really well. But as is always the case when you're talking to a professional musician, the last thing you talk about in their rest state, so to speak, is music. So we spent the evening talking about... kitchen blenders and Morris Minors. That's about it. Maybe come up in a song somewhere. But yeah, a really great guy and a great loss. But he's left some brilliant songs, which I think influence a lot of people out there. You know.
Okay. Well, thank you all for coming along today. It's really good to see you, and I loved your music. And just to give an example of Jake Thackeray's genius, here's a track, Castleford Ladies Magic Circle from 1969.
Castleford Ladies Magical Circle meets tonight in an upstairs Aspie Distro room that's lit by candlelight, where Elizabeth Jones and Lily O'Grady and three or four more married ladies practice every week unspeakable pagan rites.
dressed in their Sunday coats and their flowerpot hats. Respectable middle-aged ladies running to fat at that. There's Elizabeth Jones and Lily O'Grady and three or four more married ladies, each with a Woolworths broomstick and a tabby cat. But they don't waste time with a Ouija board or a seance now and again. No, none of your wittering, twittering, petty poltergeists for them. No, Elizabeth Jones and Lily O'Grady and three or four more married ladies prefer to be tickled by the whiskery chins of bogeymen. Their husbands potter at snooker down the club, unaware of the devilish jiggery poke and rub-a-dub-dub, while Elizabeth Jones and Lily O'Grady and three or four more married ladies are frantically dancing naked for Beelzebub. And after the witch's picnic and the devil's grog, after their savage pantings, their hysterical leapfrog, well, Elizabeth Jones and Lily O'Grady and three or four more married ladies go back home for cocoa and the epilogue. So, be careful how you go of a Saturday night. If you see a little old lady passing by, it very well might be Elizabeth Jones or Lily O'Grady or one of those satanical ladies. Their eyes are wild and bright, their cheekbones all alight. Don't go where they invite, because the Castle for Ladies Magical Circle meets tonight.
Well, that was Jake Thackeray there. Has the British government and mainstream press hidden war crimes carried out by British forces from the British people and serious breaches of the Geneva Conventions? A former SAS soldier, who famously said of Tony Blair, "It's not God that will judge you, it's us," has been stopped by the Ministry of Defence from speaking about his experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan this week. Dial It can bring you Ben Griffin's last speech before the MOD injunction came into effect on Wednesday. Here is Ben Griffin denying British government claims that our soldiers are not involved in the so-called rendition flights to secret torture camps run by the United States. His last speech before the injunction took effect when he was served after this speech and is in response to denying involvement with torture flights by Secretary of State for Defence Des Brown.
By handing these people over to the Iraqis, the Afghans and the US, we are in fact in breach of the Geneva Convention, because we are handing these individuals over to a jurisdiction in which we know, and the reason we know this is because our own soldiers have seen it and participated in it, in the torture of detainees, in the secret detention of detainees, in the indefinite imprisonment of detainees without charge. He then goes on, without first seeking, this hasn't happened without these countries first seeking our consent, or at least informing us of their intention. Now, only last week they've admitted that the Americans have carried out their two incidences that they're admitting without our permission or consent. So, you know, of course this is going on without consent all over the place. It's not just about Diego Garcia in two flights. This is systematic, and it is what the information I've released is but the tip of the iceberg. He then goes on to make this further statement: we have never received any approach on this, and I would not agree to transfer an individual to Guantanamo Bay. Well, sorry Des, you're not that important, mate, right? The US Army that I was working for didn't get on the phone to Des Brown every time they wanted to transfer someone to Bagram, Baghdad International Airport, Balad Special Forces Base, or anywhere else in the world. He then goes on to say, however, the possibility remains that an individual we have captured and then released has subsequently been detained by the US or another country and then transferred to Guantanamo Bay. And this goes back to the point I made on Monday, in which I said that we were explicitly instructed by our legal team in Baghdad never to arrest anyone, only to detain them. And then we hand them over to our American colleagues. So Mr. Brown is able to make this statement about, never handing someone over, because they have cleverly, or clumsily as it now seems, tried to keep the British forces out of this legal chain. And I don't want to bore you with more of this stuff, but it will be made public once we have put together a clear case with evidence from many individuals and many organisations, and there is a lot more of this to come. I'd also like to make one other point concerning Extraordinary Rendition. The picture that the government and the mainstream media has tried to portray over the last 2 years is that Extraordinary Rendition somehow involves flying someone from one country to another, you know, getting on these secret flights. And I've had legal advice this week that when I was involved in a detention of individuals in Iraq, and then I subsequently handed them over to an American soldier, they moved from British jurisdiction to American jurisdiction. That process is rendition. So for the government to claim that there is no involvement in this process, they either haven't checked with their legal team about what rendition really is, or they're just denying that they've got any involvement in it. Tomorrow, I'm led to believe that the government will go to court and seek an injunction to silence me from and make sure that I can't speak at any public meetings. However, I will be continuing to work with my legal team and organisations, investigative journalists and other people out there who I won't name in order to further this this process of holding these people to account. As I've mentioned, you know, these are serious breaches of the Geneva Convention, and if you'd said 10 years ago would Britain be involved in these crimes, you know, no one would have believed you. However, the government might try to silence me tomorrow, but I'm afraid for them it's just a bit too late. This story is already out there. The process is in motion, the wheels are rolling, right? And it's only a matter of time before the whole truth about this process of rendition and our involvement in it comes to light. And I think that when the British people put this in the context that, you know, there's all these reasons for carrying out these tortures, you know, oh, we need to do this to protect the people from terrorism. But when you put this into the context that we've illegally invaded a sovereign country in order to gain control of its vast oil resources, I think the British people will finally say that they've had enough of this government, had enough of its murderous and illegal policies, and hopefully, you know, we'll hold these people to account and vote them out as well. Finally, I'd like to make two personal pleas tonight. One is to all soldiers currently serving and retired, and I include airmen and Navy personnel in this, and I address you now. The time has come for you to come clean. If you have any information about the processes and the incidents that I'm talking about, or other incidences that you have been witness to, or you have evidence of, and I'm talking to senior officers down through the chain of command to private soldiers, now is the time to come clean. These incidences and processes are going to be made public soon anyway, so you might as well come out now and admit to them now while you've still got some sort of credibility. And my final plea goes to David Miliband. Mr. Miliband, you have only been in post a short while, and the policies that you have inherited were the policies of another Foreign Secretary and another Prime Minister. And I would urge you now, before it's too late, to make public all of the information you hold on Britain's involvement in detaining individuals who are later passed on for torture, handing individuals over in the knowledge that they'll be tortured, and everything else I've mentioned in my statement on Monday. Mr. Miliband, I believe that if you were to make this information public, you know, tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, that you would be applauded for this action. So that's how I'm going to finish tonight. Thank you very much for listening.
Ex-SAS soldier Ben Griffin there, speaking in London on Wednesday night. And whether they're allowed to hear from him again will be decided in court next week.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Good afternoon, this is your What's On Guide from Dialect Radio. Let's start off with Wednesday, 5th of March, and at the Carlin Academy in Bristol, legendary Finnish rockers Hanoi Rocks will be performing with support from Soho Dolls. Doors open at 7 p.m. and tickets are £12.50 in advance. Moving on to Thursday, 6th of March, and at the Cooler in Bristol, Turbo Wolf, Mississippi Witch and The Brazen will be performing. Doors open at 8 p.m. and entry is £6. Moving on to Song of the Week, and this week I'm featuring Hawkwind. This is the song Motorhead, which was the last song Lemmy wrote for the band, and of course was the name of his band after Hawkwind. This was originally released as the B-side to Kings of Speed single, which was released in 1975. That was Hawkwind with the song Motorhead. For more information on Hawkwind, you can check out www.hawkwind.com. Moving on to Friday, 7th of March, and at the Black Cat Club, which is by the Riverside Inn in Bradford-on-Avon, Fortune Drive will be performing with Casino Drive and Blank Franks. The gig should start around 9 p.m. and entry is £4. Moving on to Saturday, 8th of March, and at the Old Tavern in Bristol, the acoustic duo The Peppercorns will be performing. The gigs should start around 9 p.m. and entry is free. Finally, on Sunday 9th of March and at the Carnation Tap in Clifton, Stuart Gordon and Keith Warmington will be performing. The gigs should start around 2:30 p.m. and entry is free. And that is all from me this weekend. Take care and have a good week.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Well, that's all for this week's show. Dialect is a community internet radio station run by the Bristol Broadband Co-op, and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to contribute, either in reporting or on the engineering side, please get in touch with us by calling Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733, or we can find them on the web at www.bristolvolunteers.org.uk. Reporters this week were Tony Gosling. Thanks to our studio guests, Nicky Johns, James Slater and Richard Riley, and
The producer was Tony Gosling, and that was Radio Dalek, and this is John Peters Cullen wishing you a very good week. Until next Saturday, from the Dalek team in the Headley Radio Room at the British Empire and Commonwealth Museum, thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.